Welcome to Red Inca. I'm Jared Kimber.
This episode of Red Inca is about buying a 100 team. And for that, we got on the man who has crunched all of the numbers. We talk about land and brands, the Blast, the Ambani family, the IPL, Ryan Reynolds, and whether you can buy cricket's spirit.
Hey, Jared. I'm Srinath. I host a podcast called Conversations at Cow Corner with a friend of mine called Samba. We get into the economics and finance behind how cricket works. That's the niche of our podcast, and we've been doing it for about 6 months now, just gathering some steam. Thanks for having me on, Jared.
No worries. Well, I've had you on before, and we've discussed this, and I completely forgot. I couldn't even remember what topic we were on last time, but I knew it was something financial, obviously, if it was you, something business or financial. But we talked about something that has now come true. So let's play the clip now so that we can bask in our reflective glories. But yeah, this is from a previous podcast that we did a while back.
Do rich English board members and Australian board members want to allow Asian people to come in and run their game in front of them?
This is the biggest, like, you know, question, if you ask me. My theory on this is there's going to be a capitulation at some point. And what I mean by capitulation is not letting India potentially run the 100 or the T20 Vitality Blast or the BBL. There's going to be a capitulation for private ownership to the tune of 49.9% or 49% or whatever the case may be. Because if they don't do that, they're shooting themselves in the foot.
All right. So that is us being absolutely 100% correct. You're quite new to all this. How do you sort of try and tackle a topic like this of the combination of, you know, you're not experts in English cricket. You're coming to it. How did you sort of you two decide to do that podcast, and how did it come about?
So, as you know, last time I told you, I'm extremely interested in this space wherever there's like franchises involved and more like, you know, Indian owners like buying stuff outside. I speak to a bunch of like analysts on different teams to try and understand like, you know, how they manage that, like how they create strategies. So I'm extremely interested in this space. And recently there was this news article of CVC Capital cashing out of Gujarat Titans and buying into put out a tender to buy one of the Oval franchises in the 100, the London franchises in the 100. And that really got me going, and I wanted to like really understand what was the price that they were selling for, why did they decide on that price, where did it start, and how did it all come to be. And I went in on like a deep, almost like journalism research mode to try and like dig deep into what really happened. And I really wasn't, I was surprised by what I was able to find from when it started to where it is now. It's been kind of like a big flip coming from what the ECB wanted to do initially to what is currently going on. I feel like there's been a power struggle. A lot of like fun stuff has happened with, Ryan Reynolds and Tom Brady being involved in that. A whole bunch of like, you know, interesting stuff I found out. So we decided to just, think of it as a chronology of things that happened. And we laid out kind of where it started and eventually where it is right now. That was the podcast.
Let's start with this. How well off, as someone who looks at the financials of all these leagues, how well off do you think the 100 is? It's clearly not the league that they thought they were starting.
It has been in the red all the way so far.
Which isn't that surprising.
Yeah, it isn't that surprising. But they're over the years, they've gotten more red, which is not great. The recent year that they ended was their worst performing year. And this is like from ECB's own website and a whole bunch of other like stuff that I've been, trying to research. But their last year was not too great. Doesn't help that, some of the stars are not, playing regularly in the 100. They're going to the MLC. Of course, the MLC pays better. We spoke about this the last time when we spoke in the previous podcast as well on overlapping leagues. And I think this is almost happening out of like their hands been forced to try and figure out what's the way out. And this is this was my first, thought to say, oh, okay, are they really desperate in trying to sell these franchises? But then I stumbled on to county cricket finances, and I was very certain that ECB is incredibly desperate to be able to sell these franchises for the highest amount of money that they can, because I think at the end of 2023, county cricket, the 18 counties put together, including the London one, 19 put together, are close to £200 million in debt.
Yeah.
And that was kind of like a shocker for me. So putting that and the fact that like players are leaving more regularly because the MLC plays better, to me, that painted a much better picture on, okay, what's happening now? Like, where did the ECB start with their like quoting price? And what's really going on now? To me, it was like a fascinating, like, you know, story to kind of like figure out. That's how I got into the entire thing.
So it's quite interesting in that it's being set up very differently, which is what we predicted, really, which is the boards would want to keep their percentage, keep their power. I don't think selling 49% actually keeps all that much power in the long run, but let's let them have that. Let's let them pretend anyway. But it's also quite different because this is probably the first time where you've had owners come in and ask to buy franchises beforehand. So we know that for the last couple of years, this has already been happening. And certainly Surrey was the Oval, I should say, was the team that I heard it the most, lots of different rumors about there. How else is this different than a normal franchise sale?
Yeah. This is one of the first times when I think a league is started with ownership from the board, and then they have like sought out to make it a more private, started privatization. I like, you know, spend a bunch of time thinking of, is this the closest to the Big Bash League? Is the Big Bash League also doing something similar?
Yeah.
The takeaway that I came back with was the T20 Blast is more closer to the Big Bash League than the 100. The 100 was completely owned by the ECB. The franchises were owned by the ECB as compared to the T20 Blast and the Big Bash League are all owned by the counties or by the, you know, state cricket associations in Australia. So this was like a unique setup where ECB owned all the franchises themselves. There was no private investors at all. They did the, you know, deal with Sky. And 4 years in, now they're trying to, initially, when they started, they wanted to raise £100 million it was a very unique, you know, offer that they put on the table where the counties that they're currently sitting in, where they play, they would own 51%. ECB would own 19%. And the investors coming in would own 30%. That was the initial plan that they laid out. And by selling all the 8 teams for that 30%, they were expecting to, bring in about £100 million. Like, I think within a week and a half of that news coming out, there was like cold water thrown all over that on the fact that that makes no sense. Like 30% stake. Anybody who's serious about investing and owning something doesn't want to own 30% of anything. Given the fact that the folks that are going to be trying to own this are folks that own cricket teams elsewhere who are going to have the most interest. Can you imagine pitching to Ambani to own 30% of a team? Like that would be a bit of a joke. And that's what it was considered to be like the first time they put that out there. And I'm not sure how they came to the conclusion that this was the right thing to do. Because within like a month and a half after that, they changed it up. It was not that offer anymore. It went from ECB getting out of the game completely to saying, okay, it's going to be 51% for the counties and 49% for the investors who are coming in to partner. And they had raised the amount that they were wanted to raise from £100 million to a £500 million value. All of a sudden, going from 30% to 49%, which is a little like, how did the math make sense there? But I don't know what went on behind the scenes to say, okay, we're giving up 49%. We've really got to, you know, get a big bang for this buck. And, you know, our county cricket isn't doing well either. So let's try and like, you know, kill multiple birds with one stone. They went to 500 million for the 49% that they wanted to like sell with the 8 franchises.
Why do you think the IPL owners have been so interested? Especially considering that bit that you just told us, which, I mean, I'll circle back to that later, but why do you think they're so interested?
I mean, during the summer season, the Northern Hemisphere summer, there is still a bit of a competition on where the biggest competition is going to be. The MLC is coming in strong, but we still don't know if the US audience is going to buy in as much. We know the UK audience is bought in. And there's been a long history of, you know, cricket in the UK, of course. So I think the Indian owners are invested in a bunch of the MLC franchises as well. But it would really be missing a trick if they did not invest in the UK market. Given the size of it and the potential for a well-run tournament there to really like reap a bunch of you know, profits over a period of time. And also, we've spoke about this last time, these guys just want to own teams everywhere so that when eventually the country cricket boards cave, they have cricketers like going all around the world playing. And so the more teams they have, the more ability they have to contract with players to keep them, you know, playing across the world in different leagues. So it makes sense from a couple of different standpoints, if you ask me.
So this is the bit where I tell you that I've been talking to some of the people on the inside.
I was waiting for this one.
So I've talked to a couple of big investment groups who were interested. And I've talked to some people who are IPL owners, not the owners directly, but, you know, people that are either doing business for them or are, you know, decision makers within their organizations. It's really interesting. There's a couple of other things that you haven't factored in. One is,
please,
that for these Indian owners to come and own something in England.
I didn't want to go there right off the bat, Jared. I have that in my pod, but I didn't want to go there.
It's been brought up on every meeting I've had. Right?
Okay.
Right? The second thing is that they kind of want a tournament with a big market so that hopefully it can make some money in the future, which is fine. And the Big Bash is obviously the other one, right? The problem with the Big Bash is that most Indian billionaires don't have an apartment in Melbourne or Sydney.
Yes.
They have apartments in London. This is where their money quite often is, or this is where their people who move their money around are. They come to London quite a bit. It's closer than Australia and easier than Australia in many ways. More flights, you know, it's not that much closer, I suppose, but it's easier. There's only one major city, right? They already have football teams that they come over and watch, all those sorts of things. So those are the things that are being mentioned to me quite a lot. And it's really interesting because, you know, those are things that you don't think about with billionaires, but all those things matter, right? Like,
for sure.
When the Big Bash comes open, maybe we'll see a similar rush. I'm not sure we'll quite see the same kind of interest that we're seeing at the moment. And if you think about the two tournaments, the Big Bash has run way better than the 100.
Yep.
The 100's the 100's a joke. And to go back to what I was saying before, I think the 100's really interesting because there's about three different kinds of cricket fans in the UK, right? You've got essentially middle class and above white English fans who, you know, it's a cultural thing. They don't really love the 100. It's not, you know, that's not their main format. You've got Asian kids, you know, mostly Indian and Pakistani, but a lot of Bangladeshis now as well. They prefer the IPL or the PSL, right?
Of course.
And then you've got casual fans who are still a little bit confused as to exactly what the 100 is. Whereas if you compare that to the Big Bash, right? It's like, if you like cricket, if you like T20, you're going to go watch the Big Bash and you're going to understand it. The other thing that the Big Bash has is Australia is a city-based place and England basically has one city, two slightly decent-sized cities, and then it's like everything else is quite small, right? Like, there's a lot of Hobarts. There's not a lot of Brisbane's in the UK. So there's definitely an element there of all of those things coming up. So I point all that out just because I think there is an element. When I'm talking to them, they're saying to me, is this going to be a success, the 100? And I was like, well, the 100 exists because of 40 years of mismanagement of cricket in England. So you would have to psychologically come to a pretty big leap to be like, it's automatically going to be a success. We know the market is actually there. You and I both don't disagree with that. We know that it's well-run tournament. And by that, we mean people get paid on time and the games go ahead and, you know, you don't have whatever happened in Canada recently and all these sorts of things. We, you know, all those sorts of things, you know, the facilities, maybe, again, not quite at the level of Australia, but there's some really good facilities in the UK. No one's got any complaints there. But there is an element, if you're going to spend $200 million investing in this, and these are the people that we're talking about here, there is a big gamble. There's an inherent gamble in that. How do you kind of see everything I've just... like, is that the sorts of things that you're coming across as well?
This is brought to you by Cricket 8. They are a new player in the game trying to educate fans on what is really happening in cricket. We have a partnership with them where we host live watch-alongs, do podcasts and write articles. If you want to know what is really happening with our game, visit cricket8.com.
Yeah, I mean... some of the there were a bunch of quotes from you know, IPL ownership groups, like you said, who didn't want to go on record, but I think wanted their voice heard quite out loud. There were all kinds of you know, issues with the offer on the table, like things around, of course, like, you know. The English summer is the English summer where there's a lot of test cricket going on.
Yep.
So if I'm spending $200 million and Ben Stokes is going to be playing test cricket, what am I buying into?
Mm.
So this was like a, you know, there was no clarity on like, is this going to be like happening at the same time? Because there is only like a 2-month period when all of this happens. So there was the big like mismatch there. And then a whole bunch of counties, you know, trying to like keep back power, wanting control of cricket operations, wanting control of veto power of who will be allowed to, you know, invest and things of this nature. Like, there's, of course, the T20 blast versus the 100, like, you know, or this thing as well, which right now, at least it doesn't overlap, but there's a lot of fatigue concerns related to this as well. So all of this, like, was, you know, as one of the IPL, you know, ownership group folks put it, so much detail is missing, and yet the timelines are rather optimistic.
So just on all that, when...
It's really funny.
When the... first owners started sniffing around. One of the big problems, and this is a thing that, again, you don't really get in Australia and you probably won't get, like in Major League Cricket, my understanding is if you want to buy a team in Major League Cricket as well, you probably have to say, hey, you want to build a stadium, right? Which means you've got to buy a stadium there and build it. But you're in charge, you then own a stadium in America, right? Buying F100 team, the Prince of Wales owns Oval, doesn't he? The Lord's members own the MCC. You know, there's all these complicated things. Like, one stage, I didn't even know what Headingley had a university in it for ages, right? Like, I don't even know how these things work. And so that was a big one as well. I think what's really interesting is that the ECB has tried very hard to actually get to a point where the IPL owners aren't the only ones going for this. And I still think it's a bit like when some other broadcasters will they'll try and come in and it's like, yeah, but we're still going to go to the same two or three broadcasters over and over again, probably, right? But, you know, what you said before, that sort of Tom Brady, you know, Ryan Reynolds, all these sorts of ones, they've also gone to a bunch of the biggest venture capitalist companies in the world.
Yes.
And talked to all them. But when it comes down to it, I don't know. The Welsh team might be slightly different because it makes sense for Ryle Reynolds and that whole business thing to maybe just go, okay, well, Wales is our thing now and we'll do it. But as most of the people that they're trying to bring in, you're looking at it going, well, we've just said we're not 100% sure about the league. The league isn't making money. The best players might not be available. The actual model of the entire setup may not be perfect for the UK. It's a weird one for me when I'm talking to these people. As I said, I've talked to some of them and I'm like, I can't tell you that this is a slam dunk. Like, I'm not sure I would. I think it'll be successful, but if you're asking me to put $200 million down, I'm going to feel a little bit more nervous about that.
Yeah, I found it ridiculously funny that there was a video apparently sent over to all the 32 NFL owners explaining what cricket was. And in the end, asking if they would be interested in investing in the 100. I mean, the business operations director, Vikram Banerjee, I think he's working overtime in trying to figure out like how to drum up interest, like how to get people, you know, paying the highest price. How do I like, you know, get competition going? But I don't know, like it's like me when I started making my podcast, I just, tagged a whole bunch of people hoping that someone would listen. Like that's what it seems to be like. He's just like reaching out to a whole bunch of people saying, hey, someone listen, come and like, you know, take part in
that. I love the idea of the ECB of having a shitty podcast and hoping someone finds it. But you're right. That's what it is, right? It's exactly that. And then, so let's say you get those people. You're only going to get one or two of them. It's still going to be majority IPL money one way or another, right? The naming rights is a really, really interesting one. So, you know, I've had Manoj Badali on the podcast before, and me and Manoj have had chats about these sorts of things, and, you know, privately and publicly, right? Manoj has bought a sporting team in part so that he can buy other sporting teams and he can end up with a content strategy and a brand strategy, right? I don't know how clear he's been about this in public, but he certainly said it to me in private. So, you know, I know that that is a big part of why he did it. This is why he kind of leveraged himself to get in, right? Because he doesn't have the money that some of these other investors have, right? So that's the way he thinks about it. Now, fine. We don't know what his relationship is, although he's tried to buy county teams himself before, right?
Yes.
But if I'm the Mumbai Indians, I cannot imagine they're going to want to have one team that isn't the Mumbai, that doesn't have the Mumbai Indians in their name. Am I wrong with this? I just can't imagine the Ambani family. I mean, in a short term, yes. In 10 years' time, certainly not.
I mean, short term, no. Like, forget 10 years. Like, I mean, this guy's like the 10th richest guy in the world. Like, you think he's going to give up? Like, hell no.
I was thinking he might do it in the short term just to get in, and then about a year in, just be like, okay, we had our fun.
And can you imagine, like, back to the point that you had made around, you know, Indians buying up a bunch of stuff in London? If MI London was a team, that is the powerest of the power moves that there can be. Like, and I would want to see that, honestly. Like,
so the last thing I heard, and as I said, I have been talking about to people, but I've heard lots of different things. But the last thing I heard was that Mumbai wanted the Lords franchise, right?
Of course.
So I wouldn't. I'd go for the Oval, but that's just because I don't like Lords. But although I think that Lords is slightly bigger, so it does make sense from that point of view as well. But this is what's funny. What is the name of the Lords franchise?
What
do you know?
Oval Invincibles is one.
That's the Surrey one. Yeah, the Lords one is called. I thought you might not know this, and it's okay if you don't know it because it's not like those names are like drilled into our heads yet. But it's the London Spirit, right?
Oh yeah,
which is called London Spirit because the spirit of cricket and Lords. Okay, so you just said a minute ago, imagine it being the Mumbai Indians, London. Now imagine that the name they went away from is the spirit of cricket. Like, that's such a high level of, like, what is happening here? You know, the Ambanis are going around.
I want to see this Lords, happen more.
We bought Lords, we bought English cricket, and we bought the Spirit. We got them all in one thing. So it does show you, doesn't it, just how much all that's happening. And then you've got little things that you talked about in the podcast as well, which is the 100 exists, and you don't have the test players. We've already mentioned that. The Blast exists. If I am getting a tournament, if I'm getting a team, I'm thinking to myself, so this is one of the things I was talking to about with one of the investment groups. I said, if you think about it this way, everyone has like, let's say 8 days of cricket on average a cricket fan can go to a year. right? You don't want, as a 100 owner, for some of those days to be spent on the blast. You want none of those days to be spent on the blast. You understand international cricket's going to beat you. You might even understand that county cricket might beat you, but that's a different kind of product. And so there's an element of the blast versus the 100 that's always going to be an issue, as is the international cricket season, as is you can, and also you can only play so many months. I'm going to throw out things like, what if the IPL is longer into the future, right? What about when the Olympics is on? You know, all these things that can clash with cricket and everything. And so that's the thing I find quite interesting. And I think you were alluding to, or I think you just flat out and said it before, is that when they sent out the original idea, it's like, it's great, let's sell the team. It's not like they own a little franchise league in the middle of nowhere. And they're just like, oh, come on, you know, random rich people from other countries, come and buy this team. It's really, really complicated. Like, for instance, county teams make an absolute fortune from, like, music concerts and, you know, corporate events, whatever. Who makes that money during that period that the 100 is on now? Do the Ambani families make that money? Does the Ambani family want that? Where does the Surrey team or the, you know, Birmingham team or Warwickshire team, it's both. Don't get me started on the fact that there's a Warwickshire team, a Birmingham team, and there's whatever the other one's called.
I think Birmingham is Birmingham the one of the few ones that have Surrey is also on the T20 Blast, and they have the London Spirit. So there are a bunch of these six or eight counties that have both the T20 Blast and the 100 teams.
But Birmingham, but that's what I was saying. I'll try and get my point out about Birmingham. What I meant was is that there's Warwickshire cricket team, then there's the Birmingham Bears that play in the Blast, and then you have, well, I can't even
Phoenix.
Remember. Birmingham Phoenix. I couldn't even remember. As I said before, I don't blame anyone for not remembering any of those, right? They already had three different teams, right? That's before we get to women's cricket as well, right? So that branding is already all over the place. But so there's all those little things that are coming up and that keep coming up. And the England cricket is idiosyncratic, right? In English cricket is like 250 years old. It wasn't set up to have what is currently happening to it, right? In a way that Sheffield Shield cricket and Australian domestic cricket and everything could, it was quite easy for them to set the Big Bash up and separate it and do everything else. And then when they want to bring ownership in, which they will one day, it will be a little bit easier. But yeah, how does it work when Birmingham, right, or Warwickshire want to use the training facilities? Do they have to go somewhere else? Can they share them? Are there enough nets? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's really not an easy situation to solve.
I have a pretty fundamental question, which I think you might know the answer to, or you might like have an inkling on why.
I won't, but I'll do it anyway.
But the 100 started 4 years ago. It's not that none of this was foreseeable. Like, it was obvious that the T20 Blast exists. Richard Gould is the head of ECB then. He's the head of ECB now. Hmm. He administers the T20 Vitality Blast, the entirety of it. He wanted to set up the 100. Can you explain to me why?
So, if you want to know the full story about the 100, it goes back to a line I said before, which is basically, if you go back to the 60s and 70s, I think you could argue that because of the amount of people who went to football was still a bigger sport than cricket. But because cricket was, you were seeing the national team, you know, quite often, it was still a really big thing. And of course, people went to county cricket. By the invention of the Premier League, but even it starts to happen before then, football goes way past cricket, right? What should have happened and what would have happened with a normally run sport is they would have started to work out in the 80s, what do we need to do here? Instead, it was run by people from an elite part of society who kind of went, if the riffraff don't want to be involved, then we'll keep the sport to ourselves. By the time you get to, you know, all the decisions they make, like putting cricket on cable TV, right, makes a bit more money for them, completely loses a whole generation of fans who don't have cable TV available to them. They don't put proper clips out. They don't advertise correctly. You know, just all these things. You know, you have quiz shows over here where, like, you get points for, you know, there's a show called Pointless. I don't know if you've seen that in Amsterdam, where, like, they have cricketers on it. And, like, you can have if you get cricket as your specialist topic, you're going to get a pointless answer because there's like three cricketers that most people in England know at any one time, right? It's like, you know, Flintoff, Botham, Stokes. You might get a little bit for Root and Cook, you know, and maybe you might get Goffey because he won Dancing with the Stars or whoever's won Dancing with the Stars, right? And so it had disappeared as a talking point in the country. It had been commodified for the middle classes specifically. And so suddenly they're looking at it going, we have to do something different. Now, there were many different things they could have tried, but they looked at the Big Bash and they went, that's what we want. We want that. So they hired people from the Big Bash. You know, the people who helped set up the 100 were people who were involved with the Big Bash, you know.
No, but the T20 Blast is the first T20 tournament to have ever existed. Yes. I don't think many people even realize that.
And has good crowds.
Yes. And so why did he not look at that and said, let's figure out how do we make this the biggest poster child for cricket as compared to coming up with another newer, like having another kid?
So the issue there is that it was seen as old fashioned, right? And that you were going to have to sell it. Now, their thought process was it's quite hard to sell Leicestershire, right? It's quite hard to sell all these different counties, right? No one talks about, literally, if you're in the UK, the only time you ever mention counties, right, is maybe BBC local news. And the other time is going to be for cricket. So they're not part of the conversation. On top of that, you can't control the counties, right? They needed to be able to control the product and market it in a different way. And I kind of agree with that and disagree with it at the same time. So I do understand the point there. The third one is that you couldn't eventually sell off the counties, right? I know that seems weird because Hampshire and Yorkshire are you know, basically open. But do you know what I mean? You couldn't set up a county to be sold off in the same way as you can a franchise. So I think there was a few things there, but I really think they also wanted to be seen as being progressive and new and dynamic again. So I do think there was an element of, I mean, when I would have meetings with people, meetings is wrong. I've never had a meeting, but when I would have chats with people who were involved in this, it was like the way they were selling it was like, well, and I said to them, none of this is going to happen, right? Like this whole idea of, think about the idea behind making it 100 balls, right? This shows you what the issue was. The people who were setting this up thought that they went to a women's website. Is it Mumsnet? I think it is. And they said, why don't you like cricket? And so all the mums said, it goes too long, right? And so they were like, great, we'll take 20 balls off it. And it's like, the problem with that, and I've said this on this podcast so many times before, but if you came to me and said, what's the problem with, Chinese documentaries without subtitles? And I'd be like, I can't watch them. They're too long and they're a bit confusing, right? So the easier, because I'm not, but the thing is, if you made Chinese documentaries in a way that was more appetizing to me, I'm probably still going to think that they're too long because I don't like them. I'm not interested in Chinese documentaries, right? Like I love lots of different kinds of film. I've never been interested in Chinese documentaries in the way I have documentaries from other countries. Making it 10 minutes shorter is not going to make me like it anymore. So they were focused on those sorts of things and reinventing the wheel. I don't think that the Blast could ever have been exactly what they wanted it to be, right? But the best way of doing it would be what they did with county cricket and then putting all, if they've got all these hundreds of millions of dollars, put that into Division 1, Division 2, Division 3, which is something that English fans get because that's what football is, right? So there were ways around it. But I understand. I mean, I think the fact, there is a little nugget in all of this that we mentioned before, which is that Warwickshire's Blast team is called Birmingham. That wasn't because of the 100. They changed that because they worked out that that was a better way of doing it, which says that there must have been something floating around English cricket at that time going, the counties are not a good idea. So like, you know, I live on the border of like two or three counties, I think, right? And I think Kent is the oldest county in England. I don't think there's that many people in Kent who kind of think about, we're from Kent. They think we're from this part, we're from the coast, we're from this city, we're from this sort of thing. Whereas if you change that, to other places, like we know in India and Australia, states are really important, right? But states have governments there, yeah. Right? Like there's a reason why. There's funding. It matters. And you come back to these counties and you're like, Kent's been a county for, I don't know, 1,000 years. And you're just like, yeah, but how does that affect the normal Kent person? Whereas they're from Canterbury or, you know, they're from whichever city. Oh, that's the only city I know in Kent. But I should know more because I live around the corner. Tunbridge Wells, there's another one. But do you know what I mean? So I do think there was an element of, there's a few different old-fashioned things within the blast that didn't work. But I don't think that that means that your first thing is, well, let's copy what happened in Australia. Because to go back to where we were talking about before, Australia is a city-based country. I mean, Melbourne's got, what, 5 million people. Sydney's got 4 million people. I don't know, what, Perth and Brisbane probably have 3. You know, these are big, big cities. And Western Australia should be a country on its own, right? Like it's miles away from the rest of the country, right? It has its own infrastructure. It has its own look. If you watch news in Perth, you're watching Perth news, right? If you watch the news in UK, you're watching the national news.
If you are following my work, we know that you are a true cricket sadist and you need your hit every day. And sometimes, sadly, there is actually no cricket to watch. So how about if someone made a very fun game that you could use for the moments when there is no on-field action? Welcome to Hit Wicket, a strategic game of cricket, which isn't about slamming your finger on the screen very fast. You work out what works best based on how cricket actually works. Dot balls lead to wickets, ones and twos to fours and sixes. So there is no way you can bowl a great Yorker every ball or smash 3 sixes at the beginning of your innings. This is proper cricket. Yet it still has some gaming powers in there as well. Hit Wicket is about playing, but also building and managing your team. You are the batter, bowler, owner, coach, and captain. It's your dream. No ads, just cricket. So download Hit Wicket today, because this is a cricket game made for you and supported by major cricket nerds.
When I lived in Singapore for a while, Singapore and Perth have the same time zone.
Yes.
I like could not get it through my head for the longest time that Singapore and Perth were in the same time zone. And like the rest of Australia was like 3, 4, 5 hours away. How many ever?
100 hours away. It's 100 hours different. But the point is, so think, just take this back to cricket for a minute, right? Okay, so the majority of people in, let's say, Leeds, right? When they're watching their news, they're watching just general BBC news, right? If you are watching news in Adelaide, you're watching Adelaide news, which means you can push as much Adelaide Strikers stuff onto the TV as you want, right? Why would BBC give a shit about the Northern Superchargers, right? Any more than they do any other team.
Yeah.
So where's the hub, right? BBC is not the hub because it's kind of got everyone, right? You don't have a strong local news culture anymore. Like a lot of those newspapers, like, you know, Yorkshire Post and is one of the last few sort of strong newspapers. But most people probably still buy the national newspapers, right? Even in somewhere like Yorkshire, I think that would be overall, that would be the case. Your radio stations, maybe you listen to BBC Yorkshire. Probably not, though. Right? You probably don't listen to that,
yeah,
right?
I'm not sure who's listening to radio anymore as much.
In the UK, a little bit more than other places, but I do get your point. Social media is probably going to be more, if you're following cricket people, you're probably going to be following more, you know, The Cricketer and Crick Info and Wisden and all these sorts of things. Again, they'll have little bits on your team. So the market doesn't make as much sense to begin with. You go to Adelaide, I promise you this, Big Bash is on, and all you can bloody see in Adelaide on the newspapers or on the TV is Rashid Khan, right?
Yeah.
Everyone in Adelaide knows about Rashid Khan. If Rashid Khan plays for one of the teams over here, no one in the city would even know who Rashid Khan is unless you're a cricket fan, right? There's a disconnect between those two things, which is what you're talking about. The other side of it is, how would they have made the counties into such a sexy thing that Ryan Reynolds and that Tom Brady and that anyone would even be taking a meeting, right? I don't think they would have. So I get both sides of the argument, but it really all comes from the 40-year problem of not pushing the game forward.
Right. Yeah. To me, like, while I was spending a bunch of time, like, reading about all of this stuff, this looking to sell started early 2024. All of the stuff before that, all of the chatter before that was, how do they collapse the 100 and the Vitality Blast? There was a bunch of chatter there.
Yeah.
There was some chatter about, can the Vitality Blast adopt the 100 ball format but keep the 18 teams with the tier 1 8 teams and a tier 2 10 teams? Like, there's relegation between these. Like, all kinds of ideas were floated out.
I mean, at the start of that, so I would say what last year, the biggest rumor you heard was, are they just going to cancel the 100?
Yeah.
Right? So everything you just said then is correct, but it really comes down to that's what... You were talking to people in cricket, and the first thing that anyone would ask me is, what do you think? Are they going to cancel the 100? Like, we've gone from that to this. Yeah. And so what a position of weakness to be going up against the Ambanis, right? Like, forget all the others. We know the rest are rich as well, but literally I'm trying to go up with the Ambanis, and a year ago I was thinking, should we just get rid of this thing? And now it's like, would you like to spend $500 million on this thing?
So I think, yeah, the way they've postured going into these negotiations, as anyone should who's trying to sell something that they think is valuable or they want to get the most money for, kudos to them.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, the moment the window was opened and they called in people for service, they got seen for who exactly they were.
Mm.
There's all kinds of, I'm not sure how much money they're going to make. Like, I hope, 500 million, forget it. I don't think it's going to be anywhere near that. They're by the, like, these last couple of weeks, a few, news has trickled in saying they're good to, like, give up naming rights. Anyone can name it anything they want. Because, of course, that's being negotiated. Like like you said, why would Manoj want his team not to be called the Royals and something else? Or why would Ambani not want it to be Mumbai Indians, London? Mm. So that's been put on the table now. 100% ownership was not even part of the consideration. They've said, oh, if the counties want, they can sell it. Like, every passing week, there is another, like, capitulation going on, yeah, saying, okay, here you go, another thing. Here you go, take another thing. In the hope that I think they can raise at least enough amount of money to fend away. I mean, I guess if they do it, they don't need to fend away the MLC anymore. But all of the remaining 10, 11 counties that have a whole bunch of debt. And this is almost like a one-time deal for the rest of the counties.
So that's,
after that, what do they do? What do they do? Like, I think no one's giving a shit about the counties anymore after this.
That's the biggest question, right? Because you pay off all the debt of the counties and then what?
Yeah,
right? Exactly. The counties, are you hoping then that the 100 becomes like, not Premier League football, but, you know, maybe like the rugby or whatever, that version where you're making, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue. But a lot of that revenue obviously is going straight back to the owners, but there's enough there. But what happens next? Like, I don't understand the idea of, I get they're in debt and you need to make money, which I would have thought maybe a 10% stake might have been, you know, you offer 10%, you're not going to get the Ambanis, but maybe you get others who go, do you know what? I get this. I want to be involved. I'll do that. You pay off all the debt and then you keep it as is. Whereas this feels like a detonation of everything that currently exists. And to go back to that point before, like, you know, I think I said before there were three levels of cricket fans. I meant four in England because I forgot the county fans, right? The county fans are full on. Like, they really love their teams. It isn't like some set... That's their thing, right? Having a county team is their thing. What happens when that no longer matters, right?
Yeah.
You're hoping that casual fans come across. I've been watching, it's funny, every time I put something up on Instagram about one of my channels, I always get the same comment every time of like, oh, the problem with your content is it's too niche. You know, you need to make it more broad. And I was like, well, the problem with most content is it's too broad and it doesn't work. Right? This whole idea that you can chase this imaginary fan that may not like the thing that you're doing, it's where people go wrong, right? And so if you detonate county cricket, right? And it's going to exist, but however it exists, 2 months at the beginning of the season, 1 month at the end, the Blast becomes a tournament that you play in Abu Dhabi, like the SMAT, right? Like where it exists, but no one really cares it exists, right? Whatever you do to all these other things. If you do all that sort of stuff, what if you just lose like the hardcore fans, right? And they never come back. And I don't know what the answer to any of this is, but the issue that you and I have is that we've looked into this and And it doesn't look like the ECB have any answers to this, other than the fact that they're currently in debt. This will get them out of debt. And then phase two is, we hope it makes enough money that we can filter that money back down, but we don't know what we're filtering it to anyway.
Yes. And I mean, I think I'm seeing a trend here, Jared, in our conversations. The last time when we spoke, it got to a stage where we were like, hey, is anybody going to start looking at how to collectively make this make sense? Because there is ridiculousness like happening in small pockets everywhere. And you would think, given the, you know, 100-year time frame that England had to fix their stuff, it would be better. But it's probably the top of the shit list right now in how screwed up it is. IPL's faring relatively better compared to this, even though they haven't done anything. But
just to go back, do you mean that because they've had 100 years head start on everyone else, they should be in a better position?
Yes.
That's really funny, because that's what Kerry Packer said in court. Was it in court or on TV? Actually, it might have been on TV. So when the English establishment said, you just can't come in here and take all of our cricketers and do this thing. And he went, you guys had 100 years to sort this out.
Completely agree. Like, you know, when you have that much amount of time to figure something out, you've tried two or three models. There's one that exists right in front of you. You fumble that, like you have county. Now you have the 100. ECB is funding everything. They're in debt. Like, it's like a stop giving these people money. They don't know what they're doing. Like, nobody should be giving them money, because if they were a company, nobody would fund them. That's how badly run it is.
The whole thing is absolutely crazy. But thank you very much for coming on. And your podcast is?
Conversations at Cow Corner. And it's on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts and your content.
And please stop tagging me on Twitter.
I'll try.
A callback to the beginning of the episode, everyone, in case you've forgotten. It's not just me being a dick. Although it could also be me being a dick. You never know. I've got many layers.
It was always nice chatting with you, Jared. Thanks for having me.
No worries.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bahram Kazi and Estelle Vassadevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work.
If you make any content, Minbo Pro is the tool for you. Take your long format content and cut it and slice it for social media. This AI-inspired weapon will turn your one piece of work into so many clips. Try Minbo.pro now.